KBOO is currently in our fall fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $45,000 by September 20th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth. We're speaking with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden about his latest article.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. I have here with me Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden, here to talk about his latest article. Downtown Portland stabbing continues pattern of anti-homeless violence. Police arrests a housed man accused of stabbing two homeless neighbors. Oregon sees the highest level of violent attacks on homeless people in the U.S., according to a 2024 report by the National Coalition for the Homeless. Hi, Jeremiah. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
So, Victor Palmer Reagan has been accused by two witnesses of pepper spraying and then stabbing two unhoused people in Northwest Portland. What are the witness accounts of what happened?
This incident, happened last Wednesday, just a week ago. Witnesses, some of whom work for Rapid Response BioClean, which assists the city in homeless encampment sweeps, were apparently working to move some people. And witnesses told police that the man just came up randomly. It seemed to be, he was walking his dog, came up randomly, started yelling at them. It turned into a fight. He pepper sprayed them, and then it quickly turned into a fight. And he left very briefly, apparently went into his, according to PPB, went into his home for about 11 seconds. That's two blocks away. Left the dog inside and came back out with a knife and came after the people and stabbed a couple of people. One was a man who had previously engaged in a fight, and then a woman who was a witness there too also ended up, he ended up stabbing her too. So yeah, it's not a, sorry, a little late on a content warning here, but yeah, like not a great incident. That seemed to be pretty random in the sense of who he was attacking, but maybe not so random according to some other witnesses who have seen him interact pretty negatively with homeless people living in that area in the past.
What condition are the folks involved currently in?
They're expected to survive. I don't have exactly at this moment, where they're at, but I believe they were even released maybe the same day from the hospital. Worth mentioning real quick on that they were released from the hospital back to the streets, and this is something that's very common that doesn't really make it into this article, but just kind of thinking about this, in a different framing than you might see from newspapers outside of Street Roots, people being attacked and then ending up in the hospital for even a few hours or sometimes days, months, weeks. People end up just going out and they're trying to recover in their tent, which isn't a particularly great outcome for people's health.
Yeah, it's incredibly difficult to take care of like your basic cleanliness and health in general, and then not to mention having actual wounds to take care of.
Right, absolutely.
Katie O'Brien, the executive director of Rose Haven, also contributed some thoughts to this article. What did she have to say about it?
Yeah, we talked to Katie O'Brien because Rose Haven is literally, five houses or so down from where this man lives and where he escaped into after accosting these people, allegedly. And, she said it was like kind of watching a scene from a movie, just looking outside and seeing, there were the CERT vehicles, the Special Emergency Reaction Team, the PPB's Crisis Negotiation Team, shutting off 18th Avenue, shutting off Gleason for a few blocks as this man hid in his house for 5 hours. And, you know, she said it really, like, you know, reminds her and reminds the public of how dangerous it is for people who live outside, especially for women. Many women try to sleep during the day and then and stay awake at night because of, you know, real dangers to them. And, you know, this is kind of a little bit of an odd scenario because these incidents don't often happen in the light of day, but they do happen often. And that's not something that the public necessarily sees. When we talk about crime and homelessness, I think people equate those as homeless people committing crime, but it's very much the opposite when it comes to the statistics.
Your article does mention that this reflects a common pattern of violence against unhoused people throughout Oregon. Can you outline this pattern a little bit more?
Yeah. In 2024, the National Coalition for the Homeless released a report, and they had studied between 1999 to 2022, and they documented nearly 2,000 incidents of violence nationwide against homeless residents, with 29% of them ending in fatality. They kind of narrowly then focused on from 2020 to 2022, and they documented 97 attacks on homeless people in 24 states. And Oregon accounted for 15.5% of those attacks. So 47 of those 97 were fatal, and half of them occurred in California and in Oregon, with Oregon being responsible for 30% of the attacks on homeless people. So Oregon, you know, that is to say the short version, it's easy to get lost in numbers, but is that Oregon leads the nation in attacks on homeless people, both in non-fatal and fatal attacks.
Yeah, and there's some graphs in your article that folks can look at to visualize that a little bit better.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we publish a graph that is essentially a part of that report. Of those states, you know, people, some, you know, as low as one, you know, a handful of states with zero attacks. But in 2020, 21, and 22, Oregon had 14 incidents, all of them happening in 2022. And that was kind of when this report left off. But that is drastically, that is nearly double the number of attacks in California. And if you think about the populations on the whole and the homeless populations, to be leading the nation in that really says something about what we are or are not doing to protect people from these attacks.
And I think part of that is your article mentions that this incident will likely not be categorized as a bias crime. Why is that? And why maybe should it be?
Yeah, there's a lot to think about in here. I mean, technically, you know, being homeless is not a protected class. So in Oregon, a person can be charged with a bias crime if they injure another person because of their perception of that person's race, color, religion, gender identity, sexual orientation, disability, or national origin. It's worth mentioning that while being homeless is not a protected class, people that are in protected classes are overrepresented in all homelessness statistics. So the same people in these protected classes are at an even greater risk when they're homeless. It's kind of important as you see, you know, social systems break down, particularly with the sort of you know, white supremacist government in place that is taking away so many resources for you know, people in marginalized people who are in these protected classes. More of those people are going to continue to fall into homelessness, and people are, you know, facing not only the risk of these attacks, but, you know, as we kind of mentioned earlier, like the kind of health outcomes and the ability to recover. People talk a lot about addiction with, you know, homeless people, which is a sort of bi-directional thing. It's very, very difficult for people to recover from addiction while they're sleeping in a tent and potentially being attacked. So there's kind of a lot of complications here. it's worth also mentioning real fast, if I can take a second, that that National Coalition for the Homeless report directly said that cities' efforts to criminalize homelessness opens the door to increased violence because of the villainization and forced isolation of homeless people. So with the U.S. Supreme Court decision and the Grants Pass v. Johnson case, also out of Oregon, you know, and then Trump's efforts here against homeless people and people that they perceive to have mental illnesses, this says there's a direct link between growing criminalization efforts and the increase in violence toward people experiencing homelessness.
Right. I think you summarized a concept that's like a very academic concept, the concept of intersectionality, which is, you know, just acknowledging that like all of these things overlap, and that's not to be taken lightly. So what are some ways that folks are trying to address this pattern of violence in the long run?
I'm not sure if leaders who are in charge of these policies are aware of the statistics that Oregon has the highest number of attacks on homeless people. Again, I think that all of the evidence is just directly in front of everyone's face. Affordable housing, people having access to shelter that fits their needs, not just any shelter. As Mayor Keith Wilson, you know, has said many, many times that he's concerned about the safety of homeless people, and that's why he wants to open a lot more nighttime shelters. You know, again, this happened during the day. Nighttime shelter maybe wouldn't have made a difference, but being inside certainly helps. Although, again, it needs to be shelter that fits people's needs. And it's not as if violence doesn't happen in shelters either. And there's a reason that people don't want to go to those shelters. It's hard to talk about this without coming back to a Street Roots and ProPublica investigation that found that sweeping homeless Portlanders is also deadly. And so I think this answer is right in front of, and it's always interesting to see leaders kind of dance around the very obvious solution here, which is to have sufficient amount of affordable housing for people. Affordable can be also $0 for some people. And when people are in homes, then a lot of people are protected, and not just the people that are living on the streets, but also the neighbors. You know, I talked to a handful of neighbors, and it was a weird vibe on the street the next day after this had happened. And, you know, nobody wants to be around these kinds of attacks. And when people are able to have their needs met, this is a long-standing conversation that we've had about crime, and that when that crime happens when people don't, when their needs aren't met. So, I don't know what kind of action is really happening as far as this, but certainly affordable housing would help.
I also wanted to touch on why you covered this article and how this story is often told by mainstream media.
Yeah, thank you for that. This isn't something that Street Roots normally just dives into. We don't get Portland police press releases and then instantly run with our notepads to, you know, the police line. But in this case, you know, hearing about, I kind of had some details on this in advance of, or just, you know, kind of after it happened, before starting to report on it, that this person had allegedly attacked people without any sort of provocation. And I know that media framing, some that already came out from some of our local TV station news, would call this sort of a altercation between a homeowner, I believe he was a renter, and some homeless residents on the street. And due to our stereotypes, thanks so much to the media framing, people instantly think that an altercation between homeless people and a homeowner is going to be a drug-addled homeless person who attacks somebody for no reason. And this is quite the opposite. And this isn't a matter of, you know, me as a reporter, our organization, trying to, you know, reverse a certain framing. This is us telling the truth about how a framing, often what the framing is, and the media, you know, having some kind of blinders on, some sort of, you know, drunk glasses that kind of make them cover this in a way that blames victims, you know, of all kinds of systems, you know, and the victims of specific crimes too. So we kind of wanted to enter into this and show a little bit more of the nuance here, and as we do, I guess, and try to battle some of those narratives.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add about this article?
I mean, homelessness in Oregon is like still growing. It's like the third highest rate of growth in chronic homelessness from 2007 to 2024, as the point in time count counted just this last year. You know, chronic homelessness is up 38%, you know, nationwide since 2020 and the COVID-19 pandemic. Like, these are the things that push people into homelessness. And, you know, the elderly are one of the fastest growing populations into homelessness. People with disabilities are one of the fastest growing populations into homelessness. And I think that's an important thing to consider, as our state legislature has, you know, with a Democratic supermajority, somehow decided to cut all of the things that keep people in their housing. Without somebody coming and there being some sort of social safety net, we're going to see this thing over and over and over and over again until we decide to do something about it. Decision makers can do that. It's a matter of will.
Thank you. I also just wanted to mention that Straight Roots has a really good resource guide called the Rose City Resource Guide. And are there housing resources on there?
I believe there are at least some places that people can get a really good start. That is a encyclopedic knowledge of Portland services, and is always good to pick up. You can pick them up at the Street Roots office. You can also find them all around town, or if you have a place for them, you can also just grab a big bundle and set them out for people. They're super helpful. Thanks for mentioning that.
Absolutely. Thanks for doing it. It's a really incredible resource. And where can folks find this article?
The best way to get Street Roots is to buy a copy from a vendor in your neighborhood. They accept cash, Venmo, and tips. And you can also find us at streetroots.org.
Thanks so much, Jeremiah.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden talk about his latest article with Street Roots concerning a pattern of violence toward unhoused people in Portland. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Hannah Francis.
And now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO, with news from your community radio station.
You are listening to News from the Boo, your look at the news inside of KBOO. I'm Althea Billings, KBOO News Director. I'm joined on the show today by KBOO Station Manager Nathan Vandever and our bookkeeper, Danielle Shira. Hi, guys.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on the show. We're going to be talking about KBOO's finances as we approach the end of the fiscal year on September 30th. You've both been working hard to get KBOO onto a good financial path, and I know you want to give our listeners an idea of what that's looked like. To start out, kind of where does KBOO get its revenue from, for folks who don't know?
Well, the biggest, first, most important source of funding that KBOO has is its listener donor members. So individuals who give to support the mission of KBOO and to help keep us on the air. Then, you know, from there, we have received funds from foundations through grants. We also receive funds through underwriting, which is payment from businesses for messages that we can air, explaining their support for the station and explaining some information about those businesses. That can also be for nonprofits as well. And until this upcoming fiscal year, we have relied on funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which we are losing at the end of this fiscal year. And the fiscal year ends September 30th.
And what are some of the strengths and weaknesses that go along with that outlay of where KBOO gets its support from?
Well, getting our funding from individuals at such a high percentage of our revenue is a strength, because we have funding from many individuals who support us. And so if a few of those individuals aren't able to support us one year, that's not as big of an impact if, say, like, you know, one giant supporter decides not to fund us.
Like the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know, so there's a little bit more of a safety net with a large pool of individual supporters. But then it's also good, even though that is in and of itself a diverse funding pool, it's good to have other sources of funding that help, you know, because, you know, when the economy is tough, that's tough on all of the individuals, all of us individually. And so we can't all collectively give as much, you know, when the economy's tough, when we might not have as much money to work with. So, you know, in cases like that, we want to also be able to look to foundations and to businesses, you know, and other sources of income to help cover the gap.
I would also add one of the strengths about individual donations, especially we don't have a lot of really big, giant individuals that are giving one large. It's not one donor that's giving 100,000.
It's our regular size.
Real regular size, real monthly donors. But that keeps us from having a lot of restricted money. So most people are like, just stay on the air. We love what you're doing and keep doing it. Whereas big grants usually come with like, this is exactly what it's allowed to pay for. And you're allowed to pay for this much in electricity. And you're allowed to pay for this much in facilities. And so to have the ability to be a lot more flexible, and so to change our programs as something occurs or as a new programmer comes, is a real strength of individual donations and these small individual donations as opposed to large kind of foundation giving.
Right.
It's grassroots.
It is very grassroots. Well, going into this new fiscal year, what are some of the challenges that KBOO is facing presently?
Well, we are in a deficit budget. We've been in a deficit budget for several years, and we've been working to improve that and to get out of a deficit budget. We've made a lot of progress in the last several years. And then we realized this year that we would lose the funding from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And that funding accounts for about 10% of our budget. It was $110,000 roughly in fiscal year 25, the current fiscal year. It probably would have been about the same in the next fiscal year. So that's about the amount of money that we're losing from the budget for next year. So it's a great thing that we've been making progress in reducing the deficit budget over the past few years, but this kicks us out a little bit further for fully being able to end the cycle of deficit budgets. So losing that CPB funding is a really big factor in considering, you know, where we are financially in the year ahead.
We have had to tighten our belts in the past couple of years. So we've had a couple of deficit budgets previously and COVID and recovering from that. And that means that we've been tightening our belts a lot in the past couple of years. And that puts us at pretty high capacity demand, not having enough capacity to run. We're pretty stressed and we're running pretty fast. And so when equipment breaks, it kind of stops us and kicks us back. Staff having stressors kicks us back a little. So it does reduce our ability to recover as quickly. And that, is just one of the other challenges we're looking at next year.
Why is it important to share this information with our listeners?
Well, KBOO is a community organization. It's a nonprofit. It serves the community. Our FCC license, you know, hinges on us serving the community, essentially. You know, so we're here for the community, and the community should know what we're doing with this resource. And as an organization, KBOO is committed to transparency and governance and in its planning. And so, you know, we want the listeners and we want the volunteers of KBOO and the members of KBOO to know, how we're managing this resource.
Well, KBOO's financial situation has a lot in common with other radio stations. We're not the only ones having to face the loss of CPB funding, but also other nonprofits are looking at similar things right now. Talk to me about where you want us to be going forward.
Oh, gosh. You know, going forward, I mean, we are working toward a balanced budget, and we're doing that in a way that we can protect the mission of KBOO. We want to continue to serve as many volunteers and as much of the community as we can every day of the year with our non-commercial radio service. So that's the first priority. But to support that mission, we do need to grow our fundraising. And, you know, we're working on stabilizing and strengthening our individual giving and membership base, which has been our strongest source of funding on an in an ongoing basis, essentially. But we're doing some things to strengthen that. We are reaching out to foundations for grants more than we have in recent years, and trying to find more information, you know, from foundations about, you know, programs that we have that would work with, you know, things that they're focused on, and just some places we can meet in the middle. So expanding our grant outreach is a big part of what we're trying to do. And then we're also trying to increase our underwriting sales and underwriting support capacity. So we are working to reach out to businesses and to be able to work with as many businesses as reach out to us for underwriting as well. So, you know, on that front, we have about 50,000 listeners a week right now, roughly by Nielsen estimates. And, you know, so we have a very engaged listenership that's active in the community. And so we have a good platform for businesses and other nonprofits to share their information. So I think that that's something that we can grow in the next 2 years for sure.
As the bookkeeper, I feel my role is less about where do we want to be and what is our vision, and more about managing what vision is kind of passed down to me or passed to me. But I think the continued is where we want to be is where we currently are and where we always have been. And that is, you know, a place where volunteers and individuals who really want to put stuff on the radio and get their voices out and share their art, it's just a place for them. We want to continue to do more live remotes and be out in the community and really uplifting new and building art. We have the privilege of being in a lot of other community radio station stories as an advocate and a supporter and a framework, and I think we want to continue to do that. That's kind of the vision, and how do we manage our finances and how do we bring in more funds so we can continue to do that is really the goal.
If our listeners and members want more information or to get involved, what's the best way to do that?
Well, they can give us a call or just reach out to staff in general, but you can also specifically reach out to me at manager@kboo.org. That's M-A-N-A-G-E-R at kboo.org. And just reach out with any questions that you have. And if you're interested in becoming a volunteer, if you're interested in, you know, help, if you want to do programming, you know, you can reach out to our volunteer coordinator at volunteer@kboo.org, or reach out to me and I can get you pointed in the right direction. We're also in our fall fund drive right now, and so we're asking listeners like you for your support. We do have a lot of ground to make up from losing CPB funding in this coming year, and so we're turning to listeners and to volunteers and members of KBOO to support us like you always have before. And so this fall, we're asking you to go to kboo.fm/give. You can click the red box that says donate, or you can go to our mobile app, the KBOO app, which you can find in your app store. There's a donate button there. You can also text KBOO to 44321 and give by texting, or you can also mail us a check to KBOO at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue here in Portland, Oregon, 97214.
We also have a finance committee meeting that meets every third Thursday of the month here at KBOO. Very fun. We have a lot of fun.
Numbers are awesome.
And that's open to the community, right?
It's open to the community, and it's held virtually. So you can find a link to it on our website.
And there's also an annual meeting coming up, right?
Yeah, on September 20th, Saturday, September 20th, and now I'm blanking on the time that it starts.
It starts at 11 at Mississippi Studios.
11 a.m. Yeah,
in the a.m. in the morning time.
And we're going to have it's going to go until about 2, I think. And then we've got a programmer meet and greet, which is going to be in Bar Bar, which is right next to Mississippi Studios. So many of your favorite programmers from your favorite KBOO shows may be there, and you could say hi. And we're going to have a band.
You can talk finance.
Come find Danielle and I, and we would love to talk to you about finance.
They know about other stuff too, but yeah. I guess specifically on September 20th, it's all about the money.
And just the state of KBOO as an organization, a little bit of what we've talked about just now and, you know, where we're going, how our mission is being focused and, you know, what staff are doing, what the board's doing, just and what volunteers and programmers are doing. So, yeah, and it'll be a fun time. It won't be it won't be all business, but yeah. Oh, and all the information for that is on our website at kboo.fm.
Any final thoughts before we wrap up?
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, community radio is more important now than ever. Yeah, thanks for having us, Althea. And thanks to you listeners and folks out there for supporting us.
Well, thank you both for being here, giving us that update. I've been speaking with KBOO station manager Nathan Vandiver and bookkeeper Danielle Shira about the state of the station and our finances. You've been listening to News from the Boo. I'm Althea Billings. Stay with us.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will take place on Saturday, September 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Mississippi Studios in North Portland.